Welcome to episode 263 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in New York, March 2nd, 2013. Only about a month away from WrestleMania here in New York. It's going to be here before you know it. I'm looking forward to it. Got a lot of events to go to that week. A lot of wrestling going on that week. WWE, TNA, ROH. Well, I'm not going to the TNA show, but I hear Hulk Hogan has added a special event here in New York. He's doing at the Beacon Theater an uncensored Q&A. And apparently it's going to be Hulk Hogan and Friends, which I can only imagine what that means. Hulk Hogan, you know, is a man with a lot of friends. He has Brutus Beefcake. He's got Nasty Boy Knobs, Jimmy Hart, Eric Bischoff, Bubba. Well, I guess him and Bubba aren't friends anymore, but I just wonder which friends Hulk will be bringing with him here to New York. Apparently, you can pay up to $300 for a special meet and greet with the Hulkster, I presume after the event. And for those of you with disposable income looking to spend $300 on Hulk Hogan and friends, my advice to you is find something better to spend your money on. And this is coming from a guy who grew up a Hulk Hogan fan. I would love to meet Hulk Hogan one day just to get that picture with the Hulkster, just to say that I actually got to meet the immortal Hulk Hogan. But I find the idea of a Hulk Hogan Q&A to be laughable, because who would ever believe anything that comes out of the guy's mouth? You know what I mean? I mean, if it's going to be Hulk Hogan for an hour telling stories about himself, about his matches, about other people's matches, you know, it's like, you would really spend money on a ticket to go to a Hulk Hogan Q&A expecting to hear the truth? You know, it's like, if the guy's lips are moving, he's probably not telling the truth, unfortunately. But teach their own. A lot of events coming up here in New York over the next several weeks, and I'm looking forward to meeting perhaps some of you here in New York as well. It's going to be a fun time. Talk about Raw here this week. Talk about Impact. I have some thoughts on Zack Ryder, so if you are a member of the Ryder Revolution, you might want to turn this show off when we get to that point in the show. Just warning you. And I'm going to have some thoughts on the Miz's new movie, The Marine 3, Homefront. And I know some of you may be saying, well, Solomonster, that movie doesn't come out until this Tuesday on DVD, so what's up with that? How did you get a copy of it? Well, friend of a friend of a friend. Let's leave it at that. And I got to see the movie, and you might be surprised by some of my thoughts. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, I just want to make mention, as always, of the Layfield Report, layfieldreport.com, my latest column. If it's not up by the time you read this, it should be, as I record this, it is Saturday. And the person who is responsible for posting the content will hopefully get that up ASAP. So my latest column, basically the headline is John Cena underrated as a performer. I did a similar column on John Cena last year for SE Scoops. That was more of just a straight top 10 list of the best John Cena matches at that time. I ranked them in order. This is a little bit different. This talks about the match with Punk from Raw Monday Night. I do make mention of some of the matches from that list, but that's kind of the overarching theme of the column, is that John Cena, for all of the talk about what a poor wrestler he is, and a lot of people still do, you know, he gets the you can't wrestle chance and all that, he has a pretty goddamn impressive resume when it comes to matches over the years, and I think people sometimes either ignore that, they don't realize it, and so that's kind of the nature of the column. So if it's not up by the time you are listening to this, it should be very soon, so go to layfieldreport.com, check that out, and let me know what you think. Raw from this past Monday night from Dallas, Texas. I tried to come up with kind of a punchy headline here in my notes, as I put my notes together for this show so I wouldn't forget what I wanted to talk about. And I gave like a little headline to how I would describe Raw from Monday. And the best thing I could come up with is pile drivers, power bombs, and plasma. The three P's. That's what I was going for here. You know, you wanted your Attitude Era back. I get emails all the time from people begging for the Attitude Era to come back. Well, you got your Attitude Era, at least for one segment or two segments on Monday night. Even though both were either not planned in advance or not approved by WWE, but you still got it. Brock Lesnar bled a gusher in the opening segment after being thrown headfirst into the steel post by Triple H. And CM Punk busted out a pile driver on John Cena in the main event, a move that apparently sent Vince McMahon into a fit of rage backstage. That was something Punk and Cena added at the last minute. I don't know if it was the last minute, but they decided to do it on their own without prior approval, because the pile driver is, in fact, still a banned move in WWE, the tombstone being the exception, of course. And what these two things really illustrated to me is how effective something can be when you only use it sparingly. I mean, we don't see blood on TV the way we saw on Monday night, so it made that segment 100 times more intense than it would have been, I think, without it. It worked. You know, it made me want to see a Brock Lesnar Triple H rematch, which is something I wasn't enthusiastic about at all before the show. And I would still like to see Brock Lesnar against perhaps anybody else other than Triple H, but if they're going to do the match after that segment Monday night, I found myself kind of excited to see where they would go with a rematch. The pile driver, you know, you could hear the crowd gasp after CM Punk hit that move, because not only is it one of the few moves that looks legitimately dangerous, you know, because it is, but we haven't seen one used in so long. So it worked. Again, when you use things only every now and then, and you bust them out, whether it's blood, if it's pile drivers, it works. It's, you know, shoot promos are the same way. CM Punk cut that big shoot promo back in 2011. If you had people coming out on TV every week doing shoot promos the way that that guy with the tattoos, I'll figure it out at some point. CM Punk, I'm sorry. I just did not get sleep last night, so you'll have to bear with me here. But if you had people coming out every week the way CM Punk did that promo that one time, and they're cutting shoot promos left and right, they don't mean anything. So I think it's the same thing here. That's why this worked. I thought the main event on Raw was brilliant. I thought it started slow, but that's because they ended up giving them something like 20, 22 minutes, something like that. You know, it was laid out like a pay-per-view match, and it built to an exciting crescendo, just like a pay-per-view main event would. Lots of near falls. John Cena actually busted out a Cena Kanrana at the end, which looked much better than the one he used on Dolph Ziggler in their match at TLC. I should know, I was there live in Brooklyn. I don't really know what you would call that move that he used on Ziggler in that match, but damn it, you know, the guy had his working shoes on for this show, and he was bound and determined, it looked like, to make this a memorable match. I don't know, you know, he got a bug up his butt. Somebody lit a fire under his ass, but, you know, he was out there seemingly trying to put on a great match, which is not to say he goes out there trying to put on a shitty match every week, but there was something motivating him this week, and I'm not sure exactly what that was. I'm not sure who he was trying to prove something to, but it made for a hell of a match. And again, he tried the Hurricanrana, the second time only that I've ever seen him try this move. It was much, much, much better this time. It looked like he powerbombed himself, but still, much better than his last attempt. And that led to an attitude adjustment in the pin. So John Cena finally exercises the demons. He finally beats CM Punk in a singles match. He will now face The Rock. It is official for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 29. But just a fantastic main event. You know, he and Punk have tremendous chemistry in the ring together. I still personally like their Money in the Bank match more than this one. But this was probably the second best match these two have ever had. And they've had some pretty goddamn great matches, too, so that's saying a lot. You know, at one time, people grew so sick of seeing John Cena against Randy Orton matches. I mean, it was comical. I would do sound-offs back in like, 08. It got to the 08, 09. It got to the point of absurdity. These guys had so many matches with each other, and some of them were good, and some of them were not so good. It just seemed like the two of them had an infinite number of battles. And on commentary, at least once, I remember Michael Cole talking about Cena versus Orton as being like the big feud for this generation. Kind of like a modern-day Austin versus Rock or Austin versus McMahon. You know, just like those feuds represented the Attitude Era, or Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels represented the era before that. And I got to tell you, personally, I see Punk versus Cena as the modern-day equivalent, not Orton versus Cena. No Undertaker on this show. They did show the footage of his entrance at that Waco house show last weekend. They showed it in the form of a tout. Yes, Undertaker's big return on TV comes in the form of a tout. And by the time the main event was over, I was fine with the decision to leave Undertaker off this show. That match was so damn good, it would have ruined things to have someone interfere. Or to have Undertaker just show up for no reason afterwards. You know, they went off the air with John Cena celebrating his big victory, as they should have. You know, they still have 5 weeks until WrestleMania. They can easily trot Undertaker out there next week or even the week after. You know, next week, Raw goes old school for the first time since November of 2010. That's this Monday. That was my favorite Raw show that year, was the old school Raw back in 2010. I couldn't understand why they have not yet gone back and done it. I guess they're just dusting off the old gimmick because they have nothing else to do. They know they have 5 weeks to kill until WrestleMania, so they're bringing back the old guys. And, I mean, that was just such a fun show. They had the old red, white, and blue ring ropes, the old metal barricades. It had the look and the feel of an old show. So I hope they go for that effect again this week. But I bring this up because maybe they try to tie Undertaker's return in with it being old school, you know? I mean, Undertaker is old school. He's got a move called old school. I can see him coming back this Monday. CM Punk on this show cut a long, rambling promo about how he was more important than WrestleMania, more important than the title. He called himself God. I usually like CM Punk promos, but this just sounded redundant to me. You know, he kept repeating himself over and over. Not his best work. But it sure sounded like they were setting him up for a feud with Undertaker. So the only question, I guess, is does Punk keep up this whole I am God thing, which then leads to Undertaker's return? Or does CM Punk actually call out The Undertaker, perhaps on Raw this week, and challenge him to a match outright so that he can end the streak? The thing about doing Punk and Undertaker at WrestleMania, if Punk loses, I was thinking about this, if CM Punk loses, and I think it's a safe bet that he will, it's not a guarantee. I will just say that. I can envision a scenario where if Undertaker wants to put Punk over, because I don't see WWE making the call to end the streak, but if The Undertaker has an idea in his head, because remember, supposedly he handpicked CM Punk as his opponent. And if he has it in his head that he doesn't mind losing and he wants to lose at WrestleMania to somebody that he has respect for, who knows? I mean, maybe he thinks so highly of Punk he wants to give him the honor of losing to him at WrestleMania. I don't think that's going to happen. But for everybody who thinks it's a slam dunk guarantee that, you know, the streak is staying intact, I'm 95% sure that you're right, but I would not necessarily take that other 5% and cast it aside. But let's assume that Punk does lose. You have to go all the way back to Survivor Series in November to find the last pay-per-view match that Punk got a win in. He missed TLC with an injury. He lost to The Rock at the Royal Rumble. He lost to The Rock again at Elimination Chamber. Now, let's say he loses to Undertaker at WrestleMania. I mean, boy, this guy goes from being the WWE champion for 14 straight months to not being able to win a match to save his life. And then you throw in that pay-per-view caliber loss to John Cena on Raw Monday night. First time Cena's beaten him in a singles match in years. And it just makes me wonder, you know, was this really the ideal way to build to a match with a guy who is undefeated at WrestleMania? You would think that they would at least want to make Punk look strong heading into that match. Like, you know, here's a guy who's on a roll. Look at all these guys he's beaten. And now he's coming to end the streak. That's why I said I wasn't against the idea necessarily of keeping the title on Punk and doing a title versus streak match at WrestleMania, which I can understand why they didn't. Undertaker can barely move. Why are you going to put him in a championship match that he wins? But I just think there had to have been a better way to get this set up where Punk doesn't just look like a complete loser, like he's on a losing streak. He basically is on a losing streak. I mean, if that's the case, why not put Dolph Ziggler in there with The Undertaker? You know, he probably could give Taker the best match in his current physical state. Undertaker doesn't even have to do much. He literally just has to stand there. And Ziggler can just bump around like he did for Ryback on Raw Monday night. Undertaker wouldn't have to lift a finger. So, for now, CM Punk remains a man without a match. The Undertaker match has not yet been announced, so Punk technically has no match. And he isn't the only guy without a match for WrestleMania. At least Punk has a direction that it looks like he's going in. I mean, what about guys like Sheamus and Randy Orton? And you got Ryback, you got Chris Jericho, The Shield, Dolph Ziggler, who I just mentioned. It just seems like things are up in the air right now for everybody not named Rock, Cena, Lesnar, or Triple H. And I guess Swagger and Del Rio. I mean, we'll get to them in a minute. But there's a million different directions that they could go in. They can do Kane and Bryan, if they want to, against The Shield for the tag team titles, which I've heard rumors about. But I would rather see The Shield in another six-man tag team match so all three of them can wrestle. And you put them in there against Sheamus and Ryback and Randy Orton. And you could have Ryback or Orton do the heel turn at WrestleMania. I would say it's more likely to be Randy Orton. We've heard stories about Orton wanting to go heel. Orton is just so bland right now. He's just got nothing going on. He has good matches, but Randy Orton is a guy who just seems like he's floating around in space right now, just waiting for something to happen. So you could do that match, and that way you can set it up where Orton turns heel, and that sets up a Randy Orton-Sheamus feud. Maybe he, you know, attacks Sheamus, and then Sheamus gets pinned by The Shield or something like that. And you can do that Orton-Sheamus feud that we had heard murmurs about. Do it after WrestleMania. So coming out of WrestleMania, you have a direction for these guys where Orton is the heel and Sheamus is the face. You could put Chris Jericho, meanwhile, in a singles match with Dolph Ziggler. With Swagger and Del Rio, you could keep the title on Del Rio. You could have Jack Swagger, let's say, lay him out after their match, which then sets up Dolph cashing in to win the world title. Or, if Swagger, let's say, is going to be punished for his arrest, which he should be, and it doesn't look like he will be, you can have Swagger win the world championship at WrestleMania. And then only have Dolph Ziggler come right out, cash in immediately, and take the title from him. And then Swagger can go away for a little bit, and you can have Del Rio chasing Ziggler for the championship. So that's, as far as the world title picture is concerned, those are some directions to consider. They could do Antonio Cesaro and The Miz for the U.S. title at Mania, since that seems to be the program they're with anyway. Mark Henry, to me, is the wild card here. You know, if Sheamus and Ryback are occupied with The Shield, I don't know what you do with Mark Henry. I haven't quite figured that part out yet, so hopefully they're thinking along these same lines and we'll start to get a sense this week of where they're going with the undercard, because they just have paid no attention to it at all. Let's just go through some Raw segments here, not the entire show. Opening segment was the second best thing on the entire show after the main event. The only thing holding this back from truly being one of the all-time greatest Raw shows is the three-hour format. I cannot rank any three-hour Raw as an all-time great, no matter how good one or two segments may be. There's just too much filler on the show. You know, you had two great segments, but you had a three-hour show. What about the rest of it? You know, if we could have taken the guts of this show and just kind of ripped them out with our bare hands, this show would have been perfect. So Vince McMahon opened the show. By the way, he's growing his hair back, it looks like. I don't know if he's growing it back, he slicked it back a certain way. I don't know, but it is a welcome sight to see Vince McMahon's hair back. It wasn't exactly the old Vince McMahon pompadour look. He doesn't have that much hair on his head, but he looked more like the Vince McMahon of old, except for the crutches, obviously. Paul Heyman came out dressed for their fight, which is weird because Vince was still wearing his suit for some reason, even though Vince, he's the one who made the fight. You would think he would come dressed for one, but we would find out later on exactly what was going on here. See, Vince had a plan. That's the story. And before Heyman came out, by the way, this was interesting. Vince McMahon got on the mic. He referred to Paul Heyman as the ultimate fighter, which was a rather interesting choice of words. Heyman came out. He didn't cower in fear from Vince this week. He actually took Vince right down, started pounding on him. Vince fought back. He smacked a crutch across Heyman's back when Brock Lesnar's music hit. And when you hear that guitar riff, you best be somewhere else because bad things are about to happen. So Lesnar got in the ring. He stalked Vince for a bit. Triple H's music hit. When you hear that guitar riff, you best be on your best behavior because he is, after all, the COO. This felt really rushed to me at that point. I was like, boy, they're not wasting any time. We're barely 5 minutes into the show. Brock is out. Triple H, who hasn't been on TV in months, all of a sudden Triple H is out. Just felt like they were throwing everybody out there in rapid-fire succession. But it paid off in the end. You know, he and Brock had a hell of a brawl. Brock had his head cracked open hard way by the steel ring post. Just bleeding like a stuck pig all over the place. Just blood pouring from the side of his head. He needed apparently 16 staples or 18 staples backstage to close the wound. They did their best not to film his bloody side, which was just completely futile. It's a futile effort on their part, just because there was too much blood to ignore. And I would not want to be that person who has to go up to Brock Lesnar and say, "Excuse me, Mr. Lesnar, we have to close that wound before we can let you continue." Because if you were that person, your family would be making arrangements for your wake right now. Or if you were Jewish, they'd be sitting Shiva. Okay, the epitaph on your tombstone would read, "Died trying to reason with Brock Lesnar." And people would just walk by your tombstone shaking their head like they know, you know, the poor bastard had it coming. Brock gave Triple H an attitude adjustment onto the announce desk. He threw him into the ring. He grabbed a steel chair from underneath, brought it inside. Hunter caught him with a spine buster. And Triple H mouthed a very non-PG word. He picked up the chair, hit Brock with it in the back. And the two had a stare down with Hunter in the ring and a bloody Brock Lesnar in the aisleway smiling. Everyone who longs so badly for the Attitude Era, just watch this segment on a loop. Because it's the closest thing you're going to get to it. Just a wild, bloody brawl with two dudes who want to beat the crap out of each other. Michael Cole said this was all a setup by Vince McMahon and Triple H, who I guess figured that Brock would show up. I have to assume that's the logic behind it. But I guess that makes Vince a real wimp, does it not? I mean, he's the one who challenged Paul Heyman to a fight. Heyman showed up. He was dressed for combat. He took it to the owner. He didn't cower in fear. And meanwhile, Vince shows up wearing a suit and tie, you know, just waiting for Brock to come out and save him. And then he bails, you know, Vince bails. So what I got out of this whole thing is that Vince McMahon fears Paul Heyman. That's one of the things I got out of this segment. Ryback pinned Dolph Ziggler in Ryback's best singles match to date. I thought this was his best singles match. No surprise who he was in the ring with. Ziggler took an absolute beating during this match. He was just bumping around left and right. I lost track of how many slams he took during this match. I do not envy what he must have felt like the next morning. Ziggler did a hell of a job here making Ryback look like a monster. Ryback more than held his own. And unfortunately for Dolph Ziggler, his tough luck continues. They showed a trailer for the new movie, The Call, which actually looks pretty good. I may go see it. But before Michael Cole threw to the trailer, he said, "Starring David Otunga and Halle Berry." And then we didn't see David Otunga once in the entire trailer. So he gets top billing over Halle Berry, and then he doesn't even appear in the trailer itself. So they're already doing this angle with Wade Barrett and Dead Man Down, where if you blink or if you sneeze, you missed him in that movie's trailer. We don't need to see the same angle twice on the same show. They announced Donald Trump for this year's Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Now, hey, maybe with Vince finally growing his hair back, they'll have Trump shave it off again at WrestleMania. I said on Twitter, I for one am very excited that Donald Trump is being inducted this year at Madison Square Garden, because if you'll recall, whenever he would make an appearance on WWE TV several years ago, oftentimes he would make it rain. You know, $100 bills would fall from the ceiling. All I want to do is make back the money I spent on my ticket, so I cannot wait for the Donald to make his entrance. I'm coming ready for a fight. And that includes Noah, by the way, and even Webmaster Mike. I like Webmaster Mike and all, but if he gets in my way, I would have no problem dropping him like a bad habit. We had a Miz TV segment with Wayne and Jake confronting Ricardo and the World Heavyweight Champion Jose Rodriguez. They ended up cutting one of those, what they call, promos in wrestling on one another. They acted all mean to each other. But I'm sure when the camera was turned off, they all skipped merrily down the road to the local Denny's, shared a meal together. They're staying the course with Swagger, so he's the luckiest SOB on the face of the earth right now. If I were in charge, he wouldn't have been so lucky, but I'm not in charge, so I'm not the one making the decisions. They also played up the whole Glenn Beck thing on WWE.com before Raw, claiming that they were sending a camera crew to his studio since he broadcast his radio show in Dallas, which is where Raw was on Monday. Then on TV, they barely made mention of it at all. And the reason for that is because Glenn Beck, as much of a jackass as he may be, Beck did the smart thing and he refused to take the bait that WWE laid out there for him. He refused to appear on Raw, even though they offered him 5 unedited minutes to answer for his calling wrestling fans stupid on his show. Then they send Michael Cole to his studios to try to speak with him, and he never makes it past the receptionist. The owner of the studio came down. They kicked WWE out for trespassing on private property. I thought Michael Cole handled it really well, but the whole thing was just a complete flop. And you know it was a flop because they didn't even bother showing the video on TV. They told people to go to YouTube. So hopefully that's the end of this whole Glenn Beck fiasco. Let's not feed the trolls anymore and give this man publicity that he doesn't need. Let's move on with our lives, please. After that last segment, Miz got attacked from behind on stage by Jack Swagger. So that set up a match between the two of them later in the show that Swagger won with what they are now calling the Patriot Lock. It was the Patriot Act. Now it's the Patriot Lock. I don't care what they call it. It's still Ankle Sam to me, so it doesn't really matter. In honor of the Oscars, they aired the John Cena JBL A Few Good Men skit from 2005. So WWE doing a fine job of promoting WrestleMania. WrestleMania 21, that is. I can't wait for that Shawn Michaels-Kurt Angle match. I think that match has the potential to be good, quite frankly. Maybe even very good. Guess we'll find out. Sheamus came in to the ring wearing a suit, making fun of Wade Barrett's barely there appearance in the trailer for Dead Man Down. Here's a question I have. I wrote this down. When did Sheamus become such a sarcastic prick? I mean, I'm a sarcastic prick myself. That's part of my job. You know, it's what I do. What's his excuse? You know, when did this happen? I mean, we've seen Sheamus for a while now coming out, cutting jokes, telling stories, smiling. But I don't know. I mean, I think the transformation is now complete from whatever he was before to just a sarcastic prick. I guess that's his gimmick. He trolls people. He bullies them. That's basically what he did here. He came out and he bullied Wade Barrett. The Shield cut another promo in the ring. They each took turns talking. This week it was Seth Rollins' time to shine. He did pretty good. Sheamus walked back out again. So I don't know who Sheamus is feuding. I mean, here's the thing with Sheamus that's just so weird. He's got whatever this thing is going with Wade Barrett. And I can't see them doing a Sheamus-Wade Barrett match at WrestleMania just because Barrett is the Intercontinental Champion. And I just feel like Sheamus, even though he's not the world champion, is above that level in their eyes. I can't picture them putting him in a match with Barrett. And if they did, I bet that title wouldn't even be on the line. And that's not even a match I wouldn't mind seeing. I mean, go back a couple of months before Barrett won the Intercontinental title. I was saying I would love to see Wade Barrett and Sheamus one day at WrestleMania for the world title. I think that could be a WrestleMania main event or co-main event one year, and I still believe that. But it just seems weird if that turns out to be the match for Sheamus at Mania. And Sheamus is still doing stuff as we saw here with The Shield. Now there's rumors from certain wrestling websites that Sheamus is going to be put in a match with Mark Henry. I don't know what to think as far as Sheamus. Sheamus has got a lot of things going on. He came out on the stage. He challenged The Shield to come fight him. Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose had their backs turned. Randy Orton slithered out of the crowd from behind. He laid out Rollins with an RKO. So perhaps we'll get a Seth Rollins-Randy Orton match this week on TV, maybe. I wouldn't mind seeing that. A bunch of other stuff happened, but nothing really of any note, so I'm just going to skip to the main event. It was awesome. I've already gone back and watched it a third time. I can't tell you the last time I did that with a match on Raw. These guys pulled out all the stops. They kicked out of each other's finishers. I mentioned the Punk pile driver. Vince McMahon was reportedly livid backstage after seeing it. John Cena took full responsibility for it after the match. He took the blame because, let's be honest, what's Vince McMahon going to do to him, really? Maybe he'll fine him. I can't even see him doing that. And on the one hand, I understand where Vince is coming from. You know, that move has been banned for years. It's for the safety of the performers. One of the biggest draws in his company's history had his career cut short because of a botched pile driver. I get it. You know, he probably sees his biggest draw hanging upside down, about to be dropped on his head by a guy who went into this match sick, apparently. CM Punk wrestled this match ill on Monday night. And Vince is probably looking at this, and he's getting deja vu all over again. I get that. But, you know, these guys are professionals. They're veterans. They know what they're doing in there. For the two or three flukes there may have been over the years on a bad pile driver, how many were used that went off without a hitch? That move, that pile driver maneuver was commonplace back in the day. I actually think the pile driver was used too much back then. Guys would use it in the middle of their matches, and it would be just another move, and people would kick out of it. It wasn't even that they used it as a finisher. I mean, Jerry Lawler did, but most guys use it. It wasn't even a setup move. So I wouldn't ban the move entirely, but when it's used effectively, as you saw by the crowd's reaction to it, I think it could be very effective and very safe. So anyway, Punk and Cena in particular, apparently he decided to take the heat. They did the spot. It made the match more special. That's one of the many things about that match I'm going to remember. You know, to tell a story that they used everything in their arsenal, and now they were getting desperate. You know, Cena did a sit-out Batista bomb. He did a Hurricane Rana. I guess to disorient Punk, I guess. Punk used the pile driver. You know, that was the story they were telling. I loved it. I thought it was great. And there's Vince, you know, to freak everybody out and remind people that, God forbid, people should improvise. Because if you do, your job may be at risk. You may piss off the owner by going into business for yourself and coming up with an idea on your own. Oh, we can't have that now. No, God forbid. That's the message he's sending whenever he reacts this way. I mean, they wouldn't fire Cena or Punk, but I guarantee you that if Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler had a match, and they used the pile driver without permission, you think they'd get off scot-free? Of course not. I mean, it's pro wrestling. It's not ballet. I think Vince needs to chill out. That's what I think. So that was Raw from Monday night, and that leads me to the pathetic state of Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder has fallen on some tough times lately on WWE television, in that he really doesn't appear on television very much, and when he does, he doesn't get an entrance, or he loses most of his matches. So it's understandable that the guy would be a little down on himself, a little frustrated. Yeah, anybody would be. And you can argue also that perhaps he's under-pushed. You know, he deserves to be more prominently featured. Some people would argue otherwise. I'm kind of in the middle on it. I think that he certainly could be featured more often on TV, but I think people are getting way ahead of themselves when they argue that, oh, this guy could be one of the top stars in the company. He could be a main eventer. He could be an upper mid-card guy. I don't know that I would go that far. But Zack Ryder, for those of you who follow him on Twitter, is quite the pathetic case to follow. During Raw Monday night, he tweeted the following. This is what Zack Ryder said on Twitter. He said, "Hey, Jack Swagger, the reason Americans are out of jobs is because I've been doing them all." Now, I have to say that was an awesome line. I give him credit for that. I laughed. I laughed very hard. That was a great line, and I tweeted it or retweeted it, whatever I did. It was a good one. It was a good zinger, okay? But this has become Ryder's new gimmick, essentially. Complaining about his career, his lack of a push. Woe is me. Let's feel sorry for Zack Ryder. Again, I can understand his frustration. I can sympathize with him to a degree. But how bad can you really feel for the guy? You know, he got over on his own for a period of time. He probably made some good money for himself. Probably still does with all the merchandise that they sell for him, right? He loves to talk about how he has over 1 million followers on Twitter, which is a substantial audience he can use to promote his own stuff if he ever leaves WWE, by the way. He's got to be making a decent living for himself even right now, even though he's not prominently featured on the air. But you look at a sampling of Zack Ryder tweets that he puts out, and these are just some that he's put out over the last 2 days, 3 days. You know, last night, as I'm recording this, was the social media SmackDown. Right? They had Friday Night SmackDown with live commentary. It was social media SmackDown. So I went out of my way not to watch the show last night. And I wanted to. apparently there was a Jack Swagger, Zeb Coulter, Jim Ross segment. Fandango, fuck yourself, whatever his name is. He made his television debut, although he didn't wrestle. It was in a promo, and I guess Matt Stryker said his name wrong, so he won't wrestle now. So, there's a gimmick that'll work. I kind of wanted to watch SmackDown, and I knew they were going to push this social media shit, so I didn't watch it. But this is what Zack Ryder tweeted. He said, "Social media SmackDown tonight. Spoiler alert, the internet champion is not booked." Here's another tweet. 36 days until Ryder vs. Catering at WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium. Here's another one. "I should be the general manager of WWE Saturday Morning Slam." Dude, you'll be lucky to be general manager of a Burger King if you keep whining like this. What's wrong with you? Have some pride. Have some dignity. Stand up for yourself. Mick Foley was on the Nerdist podcast with Chris Hardwick this past week. And he was on for like an hour. And it was pretty good, as most Mick Foley interviews are. He's a very funny guy, shares a lot of stories. And like 20 minutes in or whatever it was, I forgot exactly what Foley was talking about. I think he was just talking about, I don't know if it was politics or just backstage stuff and getting yourself over and all that. And Zack Ryder came up. And Foley basically brought up the fact that Ryder complains, about his lack of a push. He's not happy with his spot. He thinks he's underutilized, blah, blah, blah. And Foley says, one day I asked Zack, I said, "Zack, have you spoken with Vince McMahon?" And Foley said, Ryder said, "No, I haven't." And that says it all right there. I'm listening to this going, how can anybody feel sorry for this guy? If this guy really does feel that badly about his spot on the card, he feels slighted in some way, he really feels like he can be contributing more, he's better than this, you go to your boss and you ask him. It's like if you're at a job and you think you're underpaid. You go to your boss and you ask for a raise. You pick your spots. You can't just barge in there willy-nilly asking for more money. But you have to speak up. You go and you ask your boss for a raise, and either he says yes or he says no. What is Ryder afraid of? Does Ryder think Vince doesn't know of his existence anymore, and that if he goes to Vince McMahon and reminds him that he still works for him, he'll fire him? Why is Zack Ryder still under contract? Let's cut him. What is he so worried about? So he's on Twitter every week tweeting this stuff. It's to the point where I almost can't even follow him anymore. And I don't know whether it's actually just simply a gimmick. It's his character now, which it really isn't, because it's not like he's doing this on television. It's some internet gimmick. When he's on TV, he's smiling, he wrestles, and whatever. It's not like he's cutting promos on TV like it's his new character where he just complains all the time. Maybe that's his new gimmick. Maybe that's a way for them to get him back on TV. But this seems to be like how he really feels. It's depressing. I feel like this guy's going to jump in front of a subway train or something, Get over yourself. Speak up. Say something. Go to Vince. Go to somebody. Go to anybody. Go to a shrink. But I saw all these tweets, and I'm just like, my God, it's just gotten to the point where it's so pathetic. It's just pathetic to follow. And for the people who have written into me before asking me if Zack Ryder could be a main event guy one day, this is Exhibit A, why I think the answer is no. Again, not everybody is destined to be a main event performer, no matter how over with the audience they may get. But you just look at somebody acting like this and behaving like this, and just think of the guys who have been main eventers over the years in WWE, back in the day, the main eventers from today. Would you ever see any of those guys on Twitter or any sort of public forum acting like this? I can't think of one person who I could think would act like this in public. It's pathetic. That's the pathetic state of Zack Ryder. So, let's talk about Impact Wrestling from this past Thursday night. First live show back on U.S. soil in over a month. They were back in the Impact Zone. There's only a handful of Impact Zone shows left. I think the lease with the Impact Zone expires sometime in the third or fourth week of March, I believe I read. So only a couple more weeks, and they're going to be out of there for good. No Hulk Hogan on the show this week. Bully Ray came out. He talked about what Aces and Eights did to Hulk and Brooke the week before. He threatened bodily harm to D-Von. Bully brought Jeff Hardy out, his opponent, at Lockdown. This was Jeff Hardy's return to Impact since he wasn't allowed to fly to the UK, so he missed the last month of TV. In storyline, he got his knee bashed in with a hammer by Aces and Eights, but he made no mention of that at all. on the show, so I guess he forgives them. I don't know what else to say about that. If somebody hit me in the knee with a hammer and put me out of action for a month, I'd be going after them first time I saw them. But, you know, Jeff Hardy didn't say anything about Aces and Eights on the show. Bully Ray was acting all humble here. He was saying he didn't feel right about being the number one contender. He knew that Hulk Hogan made those matches with those other guys, which I pointed out last week, which, you know, again, that was just really foolish of them to do, to have Magnus win a match, James Storm win a match. The whole point was Hulk Hogan put four matches together to determine who the number one contender would be. He would have the four matches, and whoever impressed him the most would get the title shot. So, of course, the title shot went to the gimpy guy who didn't even wrestle. It's just, it still doesn't make any sense. Hardy said he didn't care. He and Bully had a history together. He looks forward to meeting him at the pay-per-view. This brought out Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, who said Bully Ray didn't deserve the shot. Kaz actually had a line here about somebody using tanning lotion on Brooke's back and tweeting inappropriate photos of her. Somebody has to do it, he said, so it may as well be Bully. That's something I never thought I'd hear in a promo on Impact. Bully ended up grabbing Chris Daniels' Appletini. He drank it. He then spit it back into the glass and splashed it in Daniels' face. I didn't think there was anything more vile than Bully Ray hocking a loogie in the air and catching it in his mouth, which he used to do. But he topped himself here. That was disgusting. They made a main event of Bad Influence against Hardy and Bully, so that was the big tag match at the end of the show. Velvet Sky pinned Tara in a short match to retain her Knockouts title. This was like a Divas match in terms of the time they were given, but later in the show, they brought back Gut Check. And they had two women this week. I want to mention this because I think it's really something to compare what TNA does with the women to what WWE does with its women, which is nothing, really. The two divisions, they're not all that much different in reality, the Divas division and the Knockouts division. It's not the focal point of either show or anything like that, but I watched those two video packages for Gut Check this week with the girls. One for Ivelisse Velez, who, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's because she was on that last season of Tough Enough with Steve Austin. She ended up in NXT. She was working as Sophia Cortez before WWE released her last year. Nobody seems to really know why they let her go. Supposedly it was because of her attitude, but that's just the rumor. She claims that's not the case. And she was the best person in developmental in terms of the women, or maybe not the best, but certainly one of the best, which just makes that decision all the more puzzling. But anyway, she went into MMA after she got cut. That's where her focus was. So this video made her out to be some sort of, you know, MMA chick, because I guess that's the big thing now after Ronda Rousey's fight last week. She said that she's been wrestling for 9 years. Anyway, I thought this video was excellent. She talked about having a disagreement with her mother over her career path that she wanted to take. She went out on her own. And, you know, later on she ended up patching things up with her mom, and she's crying in the video. Like, really powerful stuff. It put a human face on this woman that I really didn't know anything about before, other than, you know, hey, she was on Tough Enough and she got cut from NXT. So the other video for her opponent, Lady Tapa, she's from the Kingdom of Tonga. Her uncle is the Barbarian, who of course wrestled as part of the Powers of Pain, and he was also head shrinker Sione for a little while in WWF. She said she's been wrestling for only 2 years, and she started crying. The waterworks were going with this girl because she was saying how her uncle had only recently started helping her with her training and how much it meant to her. So, you know, really good video. And the match itself between the two of them was no real great shakes, of course. They're still very green. It was okay. It wasn't terrible or anything. Lady Tapa played the role of Monster Savage in this match, you know, who does the headbutts and the Samoan drops and all that kind of jazz. Ivelisse used a bunch of submission holds to get over her MMA background. In fact, she won the match with a choke. I went into this thinking it was going to be a showcase for Ivelisse, and it was, but Lady Tapa showed something here too with, you know, and with her connection to the Barbarian, who I think is friends with Hulk Hogan, it would not surprise me that even if she loses next week when the judges make their decision, if they end up giving her a contract anyway. So both girls may end up with a contract, I think, but Ivelisse, I think, is going to get voted in next week. She's my pick. The point of all this is that the women can be compelling characters if you give people a reason to care. Those two videos did more to promote these two women on TNA television than anything WWE has done with its women in just months and months and months and months. So the women can be used effectively if you give people a reason to care, which WWE is obviously not interested in doing. I mean, when was the last time we even saw a Divas match on Raw? I mean, there may have been, I think there was a period of like 2 or 3 weeks without a single Divas match, and then I think they had one, and then again this week, they were nowhere to be found. The division is dead, as I predicted on Sound Off 253. If anything, I missed the mark on how quickly it would die. I figured by later in the year, they would have pulled the plug. But it's only been 10 episodes since I recorded that Sound Off, and already the Divas division is DOA. Austin Aries was backstage on the phone with his tag team partner Bobby Roode, who for some reason was not on Impact this week. Chavo and Hernandez walked in. Chavo is just a terrible promo. He is just awful. But this led to a singles match. It was going to be Aries against Hernandez. They also announced that it will officially be Aries and Roode defending the championships against Bad Influence and Hernandez and Chavo at Lockdown, which makes me very sad. I was hoping just for a straight tag team match. Aries and Roode against Bad Influence. We really don't need Chavo and Hernandez in there. But that's the match. We had Austin Aries beating Hernandez in a singles match. Not a bad match either. Aries is quite good. I know that's not news to most of you, but he is. He ended up nailing Hernandez with a chain that he brought into the match, and then he shoved it in Hernandez's tights. I never quite understood the wrestlers who want to take their hand and stick it down some other dude's tights, but teach their own. So Aries wins. We had Joe Park in a backstage segment with Sting, who was assembling his team for the Lethal Lockdown match. We'll get to that in a second, but Joe Park was asked by Sting if he now knows what a rib is, which he does. I guess the boys smartened him up. And Joe Park wanted to know if he could be on Sting's team for the pay-per-view, which he will not be, unfortunately. And in the midst of all this, Sting saw Matt Morgan walk by. He ran out of the office. He told Joe Park to just keep kayfabbing it. Went over to Morgan, wanted to know if Morgan would be on Team Sting, and Morgan basically said, no, get lost. Kenny King and Rob Van Dam had a match for the X Division Championship. Finally, RVD has lost the championship. Kenny King is the new X champion. Unfortunately, the end of this match was just a colossal, epic fail. And it's not really either wrestler's fault, I don't think. It appeared to be a botch on the part of the referee, Earl Hebner. RVD came off the top for a 450 splash. Why he would even attempt such a thing, I have no idea. He crashed and burned, and Kenny King went for the pin, and it appears as though Kenny King was supposed to get the pin on that spot. And I think Earl Hebner counted either... I don't know what happened here now that I think about it. Maybe RVD was supposed to kick? I don't remember. It just looked like Earl Hebner was the one who fucked up. And I haven't actually gone back and watched it. I just saw it and I went, uh-oh, that's not good. And the match, the 30 seconds more that they went, it just fell apart at that point. Both guys didn't know what to do, so it's obvious that somebody fucked up, whoever it was. This was just really clumsy stuff. Finally, Kenny King just picked up RVD for his finishing maneuver. And I guess the Royal Flush is what he calls it. Nailed RVD with it, got the pin. So that kind of ruined the match a little bit there. I mean, that was the big finish. And it got botched, and that's a shame. But Kenny King is the new X Division champion, so congratulations to him. We had D-Von come out for an Aces and Eights promo. We had with him the members of his team for Team Aces and Eights at Lockdown. It's going to be D-Von, Mr. Anderson, Doc, Knox. That's Mike Knox's new name, by the way, Knox. And Garrett Bischoff, I guess because Wes Briscoe is going to be occupied in a singles match against Kurt Angle, so neither one of those guys is going to be in the Lethal Lockdown match. But Garrett Bischoff rounds out Team Aces and Eights. Sting came out. He introduced his team, which is going to be comprised of himself, Samoa Joe, James Storm, Magnus, which that's really cool, I think, just because Magnus... I said on the Impact Report a few weeks ago, maybe it was even last week, because they were over in the UK for 4 weeks, and Magnus would come out, and he would get a great response, obviously, because that's his homeland. People are going to cheer for him, but he came out, he looked like a star, he won matches, he was made to look like a star even more. And I wondered if that would continue once they were back here in the States. And we'll see. I mean, it's too early to find out. This was only their first show back. But the fact they're putting him in a prominent position on one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year, that's a big deal. The fact that Magnus is on Team Sting, to me, is a big deal. And I'm happy to see it because the guy carries himself like a star. He's a young guy. He's only in his mid-20s. Maybe he's 30, actually, now that I think. I thought for some reason, I thought he was like 25 or 26. Maybe he's a little bit older. He's still a young guy. He could be a really big star, I think, at TNA or WWE. If I'm WWE, if I find out this guy's contract is coming up and Magnus has any interest and he sends out some feelers, I snatch this guy up because, and they're big into international stars and breaking into new markets and, you know, even having stars. I mean, the UK is not a market they have to break into. I think he's a diamond in the rough for either one of these companies. So the fact that he's on Team Sting is really cool. I'm happy to see it. So they had one spot left. They teased who it would be. I immediately in my mind said, oh God, please don't be Eric Young. And so naturally it is Showtime Eric Young. I'm sure Eric Young is a nice guy. I have never looked at Eric Young as being anything more than a mid-card guy. And so it's just hard for me to get into his stuff. I don't look at him on that level. I just don't. It's like Chavo. You know, when Chavo first came into TNA, you would think the guy was a Hall of Famer in WWE. Pretty far from it. Some guys are just not meant to be above a certain level. That's just how I look at some of these guys, and Eric Young is one of those guys. But he got the final slot. They had a big brawl, and it made sense in this respect. It made sense in that Eric Young and Magnus were two guys that Aces and Eights took out with the hammer. So in that respect, it made total sense. I was just hoping they would have something else up their sleeve, but whatever. We had the, the gut check stuff actually came at this point in the show, but I already talked about that. We had, this was interesting. I gotta talk about this. AJ Styles. AJ Styles has been off the radar. He's been off the grid for a while. He's off pouting somewhere doing the Sting Crow gimmick, except he's not wearing face paint and he's not sitting up in the rafters. So TNA sent a camera crew to AJ's home to interview his wife, Wendy, and a friend from his childhood named Jay. Okay, so at first I'm watching this video and I'm thinking, okay, this is corny, but it's not bad, you know? I mean, his wife is talking about AJ and they're, you know, getting married and their wedding and having kids and all, you know, going through their whole family history, and they come to a point in the interview where the wife is supposed to kind of end the interview abruptly, like, oh, I can't talk about this anymore. But she does it in the most phoniest way. It's like, it took me out of the interview. She was so bad. And I didn't think she was bad at first. At that point, she became bad. And we see his friend Jay. All of a sudden, Jay looks off to the side, goes, uh-oh, like, he's here. And the camera pans over, and there's AJ Styles, who just came home. And his hair, he grew his hair out a little bit. His hair is all, you know, messed up. He's got a beard. Because all guys who go crazy and go heel or whatever, they have to grow a beard. So he just looks all disheveled and stuff. He sees the camera crew. And he said something like, oh, you guys just don't get it. And he turned back around and he left. And he hopped on his motorcycle and he drove off. He rode away in his motorcycle. He ran away. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, dude, it's your house. Where are you going? What are you running away for? If I came home and there was a camera crew in the house, that my house, that I didn't want to be there, my first inclination wouldn't be to turn around and run back out the door. My first inclination would be to tell the camera guys, get the fuck out of my house, and kick them out and slam the door. But apparently he tucked his tail, he ran off somewhere. God knows where he went. Just very bizarre. Just a very bizarre segment, but entertaining as all hell. I just don't get that reaction. Robbie E and Robbie T, they did a segment. They finally broke the two of them up. Makes me very sad. Kurt Angle, by the way, was in a bunch of segments throughout the show. He was stalking Aces and Eights. He threatened he was going to go after them. He was going to go to their clubhouse or whatever. So we'll find out in a second if he did. First, we have the main event, Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray against Bad Influence. Good tag team match. Very good match, in fact. And I was shocked that it wasn't Kazarian who took the fall. It was actually Chris Daniels who got pinned by Jeff Hardy at the end of the match. So after the match is over, we go back to Kurt Angle backstage, who has found the Aces and Eights clubhouse. Apparently, Hulk Hogan gave him a copy of that map that I drew all those weeks ago, so I'm really happy to see that my map came in handy. So Kurt found the clubhouse after all these months. Somebody finally found this fucking thing. He goes in. He attacks Mr. Anderson. He attacks Devon. He goes into the other room. He sees the VP, the masked VP of Aces and Eights. He goes after him. I think he hit him over the head with a beer bottle, in fact. So now the guy is out. He's out cold. And Kurt Angle goes to unmask him. And he pulls the mask off. And for some reason, the cameraman who was filming all of this doesn't think to himself, after Kurt pulls the mask off, perhaps I ought to pan my camera down and show the world who this unmasked man is. No, no. He keeps the camera on Kurt to get his reaction. Kurt is shocked. He can't believe what he's seeing. He can't believe that this person was part of Aces and Eights. And of course, everybody at home is thinking to themselves, well, who is it? Show us. But before the camera idiot has an opportunity to show us, the other Aces and Eights guys, they jump Kurt from behind, they beat him up, and we never did find out who that person was that Kurt unmasked. And smart move on TNA's part. Again, this doesn't make any sense logically speaking that the camera guy wouldn't pan down and show us, but it's actually a brilliant move, I think, on TNA's part, because it's the best cliffhanger you can come up with. I mean, people are curious who these Aces and Eights guys are. They should be unmasking more guys. I've been, you know, praying for them to for the longest time now. So now this guy got unmasked, and the audience is going to hopefully be interested enough to tune into Impact first thing at 8 o'clock next week to see who this person is. You know, the way Kurt's reaction was, it's obviously somebody who perhaps he's a friend of. I mean, maybe not. My biggest fear when I watched this was that it was Joe Park. At one time, I was convinced that Joseph Park was part of Aces and Eights. He still might be. But part of me would be very sad if it was Joseph Park, just because I love the character so much. You know, the character right now, he's like the lovable loser. He's so easy to root for. It's just he's so goddamn good in that role right now as this baby face. You know, I think he calls himself the Green Hornet because he's so green. He uses all the wrestling terms, kayfabe and this and that and ribs and all that. I want this character to just continue on in its current, you know, incarnation for like infinity, or at least a couple more months. And I fear that if it is Joe Park, obviously that means he's gone heel. Perhaps that means he's going to go back to being Abyss, and that would make me very, very depressed. So I actually hope it isn't Joe Park. As far as who it could be, I mean, who knows? I mean, it didn't look like, you know, the body type of D'Lo Brown. I know D'Lo's name has been floated around. I don't think it's him. My first thought was Samoa Joe. You know, Kurt and Samoa Joe have been allies now for a while. They've been tag team partners off and on. The only thing that makes me think it's not Joe is the fact that it would make no sense. Joe is already on Team Sting for the pay-per-view. Now, we have one more week until the lockdown pay-per-view, which means we're going to find out on Impact next Thursday who this person is. I mean, Kurt Angle, they didn't rip his tongue out, right? They didn't kidnap him. Maybe they kidnapped Angle. I don't know. I would think not. Kurt, unfortunately, hasn't gone on Twitter and told us. You would think that Kurt Angle would at least tweet about who this person is. He said nothing. He's been silent on that subject. But we have one more week of TV and then the actual pay-per-view itself, and it just would not make any sense for Kurt Angle to not say anything if it was Joe and Joe was on Team Sting. So let's assume it's not Samoa Joe. I don't know. Could it be Bully Ray? Again, that wouldn't make any sense either. Maybe Matt Morgan? I don't know. It's a good cliffhanger. I give them a lot of credit for it. It just, logically speaking, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So that was Impact from Thursday night. Pretty good show. I enjoyed it. And I'm actually happy to see them back from the UK. I don't know. It just got to the point where I was tired of seeing all these shows from the UK. It felt like they moved to the UK. And, you know, it's nice for them to be back here stateside. Time for the mailbag and shout-outs. If you have any sort of mail to send me, questions, comments, shout-outs you want read on the show here, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com, thesolomonster@gmail.com. That is the only email address. Anything else is a fake and a fraud. First, a helpful tip from Bill Mitchell. He says, I just thought I'd pass along something I stumbled upon by accident. I use Linux and not Windows, therefore I cannot use iTunes directly. However, there is a Windows Linux app called Clementine. It is a standalone media player, and what's cool is that it enables those who do not or cannot use iTunes to still subscribe to the Sound Off in the iTunes store, clementineplayer.org. That's clementine-player.org is where listeners can go to download the application. So that comes from Bill. Thank him for that. Damien writes in, wanted to see if you agreed with me about last week's Raw. Punk came out early in the show and delivered an incredible speech. Later, I thought Cena's promo with Josh Matthews was great. When it was time for the match and the ring announcer started talking, it genuinely felt like I was about to watch a big-time boxing or MMA fight. It felt like an event. My question to you is, am I crazy, or did Punk and Cena do as good of a job of building to a match in one night as anybody has ever done? With their promos on the show, they turned just another Raw match into a must-see event with a big fight feel. Then the match more than lived up to the big fight feel. It felt special. You know, it's amazing how that happens. When you go out of your way to make something feel special, isn't it funny how that works? I wouldn't go so far as to say that Punk and Cena did the best job I've ever seen of hyping up a match in one night. Not even close. Like I said earlier, I thought Punk's promo was kind of rambling and redundant. Not his best work. But even just an okay CM Punk promo was still good. John Cena kept the narration crap this week to a minimum. He also cut a nice little promo backstage. He explained why this match was such a big deal and so important to him. I already felt like this was a big-time match before the show even started, just because they're the two biggest stars in the company right now, The Rock aside, and they always have great matches together, I mean, most of which have been on pay-per-view, so they didn't have to convince me that this match was a big deal. I already felt that way, but what sold it for me were the pre-match intros by Justin Roberts. They usually only reserve those for championship matches where, you know, the wrestlers come out first and then they introduce them. That's why it felt like a boxing match or a UFC fight. I think you're giving their promos a little too much credit, but it was part of the total package. You know, they were certainly very good. I don't know why they don't do that as much anymore. You know, they rarely do promos with both wrestlers before a big match. I think they should be doing it. Maybe not every week, but every month, at least on pay-per-view. Give these guys some promo time in the back before a big match. Roger writes in, I've been a listener since episode 146, and I'd like to ask for two different birthday shout-outs. One is for me. I turned 24 on Thursday, March 7th. And the other is for my brother Mark, as he turns 21 on March 9th. Wow. 2 days apart. It's great timing. I've been a loyal listener since my father turned me on to listening to your show, as it gives me great entertainment on the way to my college classes every day. Every day. Every Monday morning, I should say. And I get my TNA news from you as well. I don't watch TNA because if I wanted to watch former WWE performers, I would watch old episodes of Raw. Well, that's not really fair. Some of the most entertaining guys on the TNA roster right now have never even set foot in the WWE ring. I don't know how you could say that. Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, Joe Park, Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian. Come on. Anyway, he says, I know pile drivers are banned in WWE. Why would Vince McMahon get so angry backstage at Raw on Monday, even though the pile driver spot involved two of the biggest stars in the company? I know of the risks, but one would think that with WWE invested in the PG era, why wasn't he more pissed at the color that Brock Lesnar received in the brawl with Triple H? I don't see why he wasn't angry at the blood, but he was evidently furious at the pile driver spot. In closing, I'd like to congratulate you on your newfound success with LayfieldReport.com and hope to be listening for many more years to come of the Sound Off. So thank you, Roger. Who said Vince wasn't upset about the blood? I mean, he was right there when it happened. You know, you could see Vince sitting down next to the announcers as Brock is stumbling around with blood covering half his face. I'm sure he wasn't thrilled when he saw that. The difference is that it was all an accident. You know, sometimes shit happens. People bleed. It wasn't something that he and Triple H planned. He didn't blade himself. The pile driver spot was premeditated. They knew what they were doing when they did that spot. They knew exactly what they were going to do, and they were going to do it without Vince's knowledge. That's the difference. Ed Crumlish has been a fan of the Sound Off since episode 1, but has never written in before. This is his first time writing in. Years ago, I was a fan of The Pro Wrestling Report, he says, and their website's news feed was just a direct link to SEScoops.com, which turned me onto the site. Needless to say, I tuned into your first podcast and haven't missed an episode since. My wife and I both listen to your show every week, and it is absolutely the highlight of our wrestling week. Thanks for providing me with hours of entertainment, and please don't ever stop podcasting. I wanted to get your opinion on the Miz TV segment from Raw with Del Rio, Zeb Coulter, and Jack Swagger. I wasn't sure if it was just me or if this segment did little to get me behind Del Rio and more to make me sympathize with Camp Coulter. When Zeb pointed out that non-citizens were not allowed to purchase land in Mexico, which he never said was wrong, Del Rio's only response was, "Don't make fun of my people." Also, when Coulter talked about people being illegals, which is the truth, right, wrong, or indifferent, Del Rio's comeback was, "Go ahead and make us leave." That just seems to be a heel response to me. It just seemed odd that the heels would make a true point to the fact of it isn't right for people to live here and take jobs away from citizens who pay taxes to support roads, schools, police, etc., without contributing to the government. Coulter also tried to make the connection that Americans cannot do the same thing in Mexico, while the babyface's stance basically was, "Don't talk about my mommy. If you don't like it, make me leave. And America is open for anyone to come here, regardless if they wish to follow the legal protocols for doing so or not." I really want to get into this feud. Maybe I'm overanalyzing this, but it just fell flat to me and seemed to be either counterproductive or a waste of time. After watching this, I feel like the only thing it accomplished was to set up a Raw match between Miz and Swagger. Well, then maybe they shouldn't have started the storyline in the first place. If the idea, as Coulter himself said when he broke kayfabe in that stupid YouTube video, is to paint the babyface as the hero, standing up for his people against these bullies, then they have failed so far. I think that Ed makes a very valid point. Whenever you think of Coulter's points, Del Rio's response was weak. He had no real comeback. I think this storyline is just way over the heads of their core audience, which are wrestling fans. Whether they're Mexican or Caucasian, you know, these people don't watch WWE to discuss the issue of illegal immigration, you know, or race or religion or anything like that. So when they try to get deep with this kind of stuff, I just think it falls flat. I got a shout out here from Zach Holker, who's been a listener of the show since about episode 130 or so. He has a question, too, but I'll get to that off the air. The shout-out is, apparently, he has his college A-level results on Thursday. He's very nervous, but wanted a shout-out. I guess some good luck. So I certainly wish him good luck in that. He's hoping that it will take him one step closer to learning accountancy, business studies, and statistics in New York. And he says, "When I'm earning millions of dollars, we can watch Monday Night Raw in my penthouse." So, hey, I'm going to take you up on that offer. So I'm going to archive this show, and I'm going to check in with you periodically. And if, in fact, you do get that penthouse, I better get an invite. I'm going to hold you to that. Fabian Robalozo writes in, "I've been listening to your podcast since 2008. I was there when you quit SE Scoops Live with Noah Mark because Raw had become so unbearable, and you guys played Leave the Memories Alone. Also, when you ranted about Michael Jackson, which I think is one of the top three sound-offs you've ever done." Well, don't tell Webmaster Mike that. He will blow a gasket if you let him know about that. That is his least favorite sound off of all time. If he could wipe that show off the face of the earth, he would. But I won't let him, so don't worry. Anyway, Fabian says, "I'd appreciate a shout out for one of your longtime listeners and someone who has not missed a sound off in about 5 years. So thank you, Fabian. I appreciate your loyalty." God, I remember that show I did with Noah. Raw was so bad back then. For those of you who think the show is bad now, yes, it's too long. 3 hours is just a ridiculous amount of time for Raw every single week. But for those of you who think the show is just like atrocious these days, it's really not. It's really not bad at all, especially when you compare it to even 3 or 4 years ago, you know, 5 years ago. And I'm not saying that Raw was terrible every week back then, but there were some god-awful shows. And in many ways, Raw is actually better than it was even then. So, anyway, I just couldn't take it anymore. That's why I had to stop. Tony writes in, "What pile driver do you think is more dangerous, the one CM Punk did on Monday, or the package pile driver that Kevin Steen uses? Any move that results in someone being dropped on their head is a dangerous move. You know, as long as the person executing that move is a professional and they know what they're doing, it reduces the element of danger, but they're all equally dangerous. I can't just pick one over the other." This comes from Nissim Levy. "I'm assuming The Undertaker will beat his opponent at WrestleMania, and I'm pretty sure John Cena will beat The Rock. Triple H will beat Brock Lesnar, and after Swagger's DUI, he'll probably get to beat or rather, he will get beat by Del Rio. The point of all this is that there won't be many surprises result-wise at this year's WrestleMania. Do you think it will translate into less pay-per-view orders and hurt the company's pockets? You know, with Brock Lesnar signing a new deal that takes him through WrestleMania 31, I don't know that it's such a lock anymore that he beats Triple H. I think it would be quite foolish, quite frankly, for them to beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Let him win and keep him strong for the next big pay-per-view match, I say. It's not like if he beats Triple H, you're beating down one of your other young, up-and-coming guys. Triple H is Teflon. He can lose as many matches as he wants to, and people aren't going to look down on him. They're not going to look at him as being anything less. There's a lot of money they can make with Brock Lesnar in there, with The Rock, which is rumored for WrestleMania next year. Even another Lesnar-Cena match, which I'm sure is probably not the direction they're going in. Lesnar-Orton, Lesnar-Sheamus, Lesnar and Undertaker at some point. I mean, there's so many potential money matches for Brock Lesnar, and I feel like every time he loses, it takes a little bit of the edge off. So, I'm not saying I expect Brock Lesnar to win. I'm not making an early prediction yet for WrestleMania. I still think Triple H wins, but I just think it might make more sense to reconsider that now that they have him locked in for another 2 years. They own him. He's not going to TNA or UFC or anywhere else. They've got him for the next 2 years. You may as well build him up and make the most out of it. As far as Swagger is concerned, look, they may end up not punishing the guy at all, which I think is a complete joke. I could still see him winning the world title at WrestleMania, you know, if they wanted to prolong the feud with Del Rio. I think Undertaker beats Punk, yes. I think Cena beats Rock, yes, I agree. But I don't think those other matches are slam dunk guarantees. And even if they were, I don't think it matters. You can have a predictable outcome. People are not going to not buy your pay-per-view if they think they know who's going to win. I mean, for how many years was Hulk Hogan on top in the original Hogan era? Like 4 straight years before he lost the championship. And even the second Hogan run. I mean, how many big-time matches was Hulk Hogan involved in where a blind person can see where they were going with this? You know, but they still did big business. See, if they give people a compelling reason to buy, they're going to buy. Whether that's a big dream match between two legends or some celebrity tie-in or just a really good story with a match that people want to see. How many boxing fights with Mayweather or with Pacquiao did they have where each guy faced some scrub who had no business being in the ring with them, and they still drew because they were an attraction? People wanted to see Manny Pacquiao fight even if they knew 10 times out of 10 he was going to win. So I don't think it'll hurt WWE's bottom line at all. In fact, I think this show will end up being the number one or number two all-time show for the company in terms of business. You've got The Rock and Brock Lesnar on the same show. This show is going to do monster business. It doesn't matter if people think they know who's going to win. Jason Guerrero writes in, I've been a fan of the Sound Off since episode 70-ish, and I was just wondering why you hate The Miz so much. I understand he sucked as a chicken heel champ, but now they book him as, I won't say a tough guy, but a fearless guy. I think he's a decent performer. Just want to know why the hate. I don't hate The Miz. When have I said that I hated The Miz? I love The Miz. He's a hard worker. He's decent in the ring. He's a movie star now. He's the next Ric Flair. What's not to like? I got Jason's letter here, and I figured I would use this as an opportunity to talk about The Marine 3. I saw The Miz's new film. This was his first starring role, I think, in any movie, let alone a WWE film. It is officially out on DVD this Tuesday. I got my hands on a copy through a friend of a friend, as I said. And interestingly enough, Neil McDonough is the real name of the villain in this movie. He's the actor who plays the villain in The Marine 3. He was also the villain in The Rock's movie Walking Tall, for those of you who saw that movie. He's been in a bunch of other stuff. There's another actor, I don't know his name offhand, but the other thing I noticed is there is an actor in this movie, one of the bad guys, who played the exact same role and looked, I mean, this guy looked, sounded, acted, everything. It was like the same character almost in the new Steve Austin movie. Steve Austin has a new movie out with Dolph Lundgren called The Package, which was a straight-to-DVD release. I watched that last week. I don't remember, actually, if I mentioned this on the Sound Off last week. I watched the movie. I thought it was good, but I thought it was the weakest of the Steve Austin action films that he's put out the last couple of years. It's complete B-level movie action, but I love it because it's like Steve Austin in these movies is so perfect in that role. Like, that is the role for Steve Austin. They don't force him to be anything that he's not. And it's usually pretty good action. I thought the Austin one that just came out was the weakest of the bunch. I didn't really like it as much. But one of the bad guys in the Austin movie is also in the exact same role in the Miz movie. So I thought that was kind of interesting. How is Miz's performance? I'm sure that's what people might be a little curious to know. How is the Miz as the Marine? Because, you know, when I think of a Marine, I can't say that I think of Mike Mizanin. He's not the first face that pops into my head. I will say this. There was nothing wrong with the Miz in this movie. The Miz was fine. After a while, I lost myself in the movie. I wasn't distracted by the fact that, oh my God, it's the Miz. He's trying to be a tough guy. He, you know, it has its moments where maybe, you know, you think to yourself, come on now. You know, Miz tries to act tough. And again, I don't look at him as being a tough guy. But as an actor, he's got some work to do. I mean, you watch the beginning of the movie. One thing I noticed about Miz in the movie, and I don't know if this was just the script or if this is just something that he does on his own. I'm guessing it was just the script because he wouldn't have improvised and gone off script. The dialogue in this movie, especially at the beginning, is not good. It leaves a lot to be desired. So, for example, somebody will say something to Miz early in the movie, and Miz will repeat what they say. So Miz just came home. You know, he came home. He's on active duty. He's back home now. His friend picks him up to take him back home, and his friend's bringing him up to speed on everything that's happening in this little town where they live. And the friend will, I don't know, I'm just making shit up now. The friend will say something like, oh yeah, and you know, Pete opened up a bar. And the Miz will be like, Pete opened up a bar? And then there'll be another piece of dialogue, and the Miz does the exact same thing. It's like lazy writing. You know? I don't know. The dialogue is not great. But I thought The Miz was perfectly fine in this movie. And I'll tell you what, originally this movie was pegged for Randy Orton. Randy Orton was going to be the Marine, remember? And there was a whole big controversy. Randy Orton in real life, he went AWOL. How can you put this guy in a movie as a Marine? So WWE backed off, then Miz got the part. And I think Miz did a much better job than Randy Orton would have done. I just don't look at Randy Orton as being a good actor. He's very wooden. He's very stiff. I think Miz did a better job in this movie than Randy Orton probably would have. Even though you can argue that Randy Orton maybe looks like more of a tough guy than Miz does, but I thought Miz was fine. I really didn't find too much fault in his performance. He's pretty much at the level he's at. He's not great, but he was fine, and the movie itself was okay. Don't go into this movie thinking it's going to be anything great, and I think if anything, maybe you'll come out of it thinking, hey, that wasn't a bad film. I didn't see The Marine 2. So I don't know how Ted DiBiase was in that role. I saw the original Marine. That was a long-ass time ago. I don't know how Ted DiBiase was in the sequel, so I can't really compare. But I thought Miz was fine. So if you're into this kind of action-type movie, if you know what to expect, if you've watched a lot of the other WWE films, you know, buy a copy of The Marine 3. You'll probably be able to enjoy it for what it's worth. Here's the thing about the movie that I liked, and this kind of caught me by surprise. Excuse me. The movie was more violent than I thought it would be. I don't know what the official rating is on the movie. I think it's... I should check here. I think it's probably PG-13. And I know that just because WWE is PG doesn't mean all their movies are, because they're not. But this movie was a lot more violent and brutal than I thought it would be. I won't say it's the most brutal action movie. It's not like Expendables brutal or brutal violence like you would see in a horror film, but you know, there's a lot of gun battles and stuff, and they show it all, you know. And Miz will walk up to somebody and just shoot him in the head, and people get all shot up and bloodied, and they show the whole thing. I guess I had a preconceived notion about what to expect in this film, and it was more violent than I thought it would be. So maybe that's part of the reason why I enjoyed it so much. I love violence in action movies. I do. And if you, you know, are going into this movie thinking it's appropriate for your son, let's say, and your son is very young, then you might have to think twice, because there actually is quite a bit of violence in this movie. So That caught me by surprise, but I thought the Marine 3 was okay for what it was. So there you go. That's my review of Miz in Marine 3 Homefront, which, again, is available this Tuesday on DVD. So if you're into that sort of thing, you can pick up a copy. Matt I. writes in, turned 27 last Monday, so I want to wish Matt a happy belated birthday. He says, I recently rewatched the Lesnar-Cena match from Extreme Rules. I remember rumors circulating like crazy after that match. One in particular was an article from SE Scoops that there was heat on Brock because he flipped out backstage after the match. Lesnar supposedly felt that Cena no-sold the beating he took. Additionally, there is a scary spot in the match where Lesnar jumps off the metal stairs. He's supposed to crash into Cena. Instead, he falls over the ropes and out of the ring. If rumors are true, Lesnar blames Cena for that botch, stating that Cena purposefully pulled the ropes down. I also read a second rumor that Lesnar's freakout backstage was a work to create ambiguity and realism for future storylines. What's your take on all this? Has there been heat on Brock since coming back? And what do you think happened after the Lesnar-Cena match? I never heard any rumors at all about Brock thinking Cena held the ropes down on purpose. That's a new one. I've never heard that before. If you watch the tape, Brock clearly overshot the ropes. It was his own fault. It wasn't John Cena's fault. You know, as far as whether or not there's heat on Brock Lesnar, if there is, I don't know of any. I haven't read any reports from people who would know, you know, about Brock having you know, heat with anybody backstage. The only story I've heard about him would have been backstage after that match. The story, as I understand it, just to separate fact from fiction here, is that Brock was, he was pissed when he heard that John Cena was back on the microphone, you know, cutting a promo. He flipped out. Was it all a work, you know, for the boys in the back? I mean, who knows? What purpose would that serve? I love these stories. Well, maybe they, you know, it was all part of the plan, and Vince was in on it, and Brock flipped out just to make all the wrestlers in the back think that he really was freaking out. I mean, that sounds like something that you would see in WCW back in the day. What purpose does that serve? I don't understand. Okay, so if Brock gets upset and everybody sees that he's upset, is it meant to drive stories on the internet that Brock is out of control? Or, like, what's the angle here? I don't get it. I never believed that story. I don't think that's true at all. I think that's bullshit. But nobody seems to know for sure. Except Brock. I guess Brock and Vince would be the only people who would know. But you know, John Cena gets on the microphone, and Brock is just incensed. You know, he's hearing Cena out there cutting a promo, telling people get home safe, and this and that. He probably was legitimately pissed, and I say rightfully so. I mean, after the beating that Cena took, you know, he's got blood running down his head, he's in the fight of his life. On a pay-per-view, no less, he thinks it's appropriate to grab a microphone and just start cutting a promo. I mean, I know he does that sort of thing off the air for the live crowd. Maybe he thought he was off the air. I doubt that. You know, he knew what he was doing. He kept motioning like his arm was fucked. So, I mean, maybe he thought something was torn. He was going to be on the shelf for a while. And so he decided to say goodbye. I mean, if that's the case, why not save it for Raw the next night? Even now, I think back to that promo and I just find the whole thing bewildering. You know, if I were Brock Lesnar, I'd be upset too. David Banch from Wisconsin, been a listener since episode 224. I would love a birthday shout-out for February 22nd. I know it's a bit late, but I was pretty busy last week and forgot to write in. So busy he forgot his own birthday. That's terrible. That's awful. I also would like to say that this Monday was the first time I participated in the Raw thread on Facebook. I met a lot of people and was pretty vocal because everybody was so easy to talk to. If anybody listening has not been part of this yet, you should definitely give it a try. It's entertaining to listen to other people's opinions, and it makes those 3 hours seem a little bit more bearable. That's right. Friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can be part of our little community we got going on there on Facebook. there you go. Straight from one of our own listeners. He gives a thumbs up to the Facebook page. He has two quick questions here. Question number one, at WrestleMania 18, we had the past versus present match with Hogan versus Rock. Then at WrestleMania 28, we had it again with Rock versus Cena. Do you think that Rock winning both of those matches was the right call? The Hogan match, yes. I thought they should have played Hogan's Real American Music when he turned babyface and started posing at the end. But I remember being very upset about that at the time. But he didn't have to win that match. I mean, in storyline, Hulk Hogan tried to kill The Rock. Think about that. He tried to murder him. He hit him with a semi-truck. I think it was time for the babyface to get his win back. You know, plus, they needed a reason to do the angle with Hall and Nash turning on Hogan after the match. That's what turned Hulk Hogan babyface. You know, and then they got him to do the posing, and he ended up winning the world championship a month later. So, as usual, Hogan ends up with the spotlight anyway, even in defeat. Believe me, he was perfectly fine with losing that match, given what ended up happening afterwards. It wasn't The Rock out there posing, it was Hulk Hogan posing. You would think Hulk Hogan won anyway, even though he lost. The John Cena match, it was the right call if the plan all along was to build to a rematch for the title and have Rock put Cena over. My impression is that it was always the plan. And again, last year they were in Miami, Rock's hometown, for that very first match. I was there. Place went apeshit when he won. So yeah, I think it was the right move. I think at the time I may have argued that John Cena winning made the most sense because he was full-time and Rock wasn't. And you got to do business the right way by putting over the guys that are here today. But if they were coming back with another match anyway, then it's fine. I think I have no problem with that. Question number two, around the same time as the Hogan vs. Rock match, I'm pretty sure John Cena was just debuting. If they continued the pattern and had a match at WrestleMania 38 with John Cena vs. anybody who has debuted recently, somebody who you think will be a big star, who would you want that to be? Well, I mean, who's to say that person's even debuted on television yet? You know, you never know where people are going to end up. I think The Shield are all going to be big stars. Ambrose, I think, will be a big heel. The other two guys, I think, will be big baby faces. I think we could see Seth Rollins in that spot, or Roman Reigns. I've said before, I think Roman Reigns is going to be the first big breakout star of that group when the time is right. Or maybe it shouldn't be somebody who's debuted in the last, you know, 8 or 9. Let's say it's WrestleMania 38. Why does it have to be somebody who debuted 8 years earlier? Maybe it should be somebody newer and fresher who doesn't come along until 3 or 4 years before WrestleMania 38. Somebody that we don't even know yet. It doesn't have to be somebody that's on TV now. You know, you don't need to give everybody 6 or 7 or 8 years to really get over and become a big star. Sometimes that one special person comes along and they get over instantaneously. So, I don't know who it's going to be, but I could see it being somebody from The Shield, and if I had a pick, I would say Rollins or Reigns, probably more so than Ambrose, just because Ambrose will be... Ambrose just seems like a career-made heel to me, you know, and if you're looking for that big babyface versus babyface match, I just can't see him in that role. All right, let's wrap up the mailbag here. We've gone a little overtime this week. All great questions. Please keep sending them in to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. When emailing, please try to include how long you've been listening for. If you can remember around what episode number, put that in your email as well. Follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. I'm only about 10 followers away from 2,000, so it's very exciting. So, @Solemonster on Twitter. Facebook.com, I mentioned before. Facebook.com/TheSolemonster. We have some great discussion going on every Monday night in the Raw thread, pay-per-views, and just a whole bunch of different things. So, friend me on there. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. My username is TheSolemonster, all one word, no space. I do intend to put up the next vintage episode, episode 7 of The Sound Off, very soon. I don't know when, so please stop asking me. And I also am going to try to put up the first SE Scoops live show that me and Noah did back in 2008. Again, I don't know when, but that's my plan. So if you don't want to miss that, you can subscribe. And when new videos go up, I think you get an email notification. I think that's how it works. You can also subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. Just type in Solemonster Sounds Off. And it is free. It does not cost you anything. Every time a new show goes up, if there's a bonus show during the week, maybe you miss it, you're on SE Scoops, you just overlook it because you're not expecting it, you can avoid all that confusion by just subscribing in iTunes, and when a new show goes up, it will be automatically downloaded for you. And check out my next Layfield Report Walking Dead review, which will be up Sunday night after the next episode of the best show on television, The Walking Dead. So, episode 264, coming up next weekend, we'll have a full report on Old School Raw and any other news that breaks during the week. Seems like there's been a lot of news breaking of late, so I'm sure there'll be something to talk about. So, until next time, be well, stay safe, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you right back here for another edition of The Sound Off next weekend on SEScoops.com.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemn Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.